Hashem.
We have a request here.
Yes.
If you put on your video, but that's only if it doesn't take up too much bandwidth and we can't hear you properly.
Okay, we'll see in a second. My video's on.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah, good, sounds good.
Okay, I mean, I don't know if it takes up my... I don't know if it takes up your video or not, if it's your bandwidth, but I'm fine with it. I don't have any disturbance here with it. It's fine.
Okay. If there's disturbance, I'll let you know, but it's fine.
Okay. Good. I think we're holding here with Perek Yom Kippurim.
Yep.
Can I ask you another question?
Sure.
I don't know if you want to spend time on this.
Is that why you wanted me on video?
No, I didn't.
Yeah.
Last week, we spoke about a person finding their sense of self.
Yes.
And the cheshivas of self.
Right.
Either internally or externally.
Right.
How would you describe what it means to find it internally?
Okay. If I see... First of all, it involves a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And I say, what am I? The answer is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu put things into me that are potential, and the realization thereof is the realization of self. So that's where self comes in. It's vis-a-vis HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and secondly, it's because, not because I've made a mark with others. Let's give an example. If I get sent by an army on a mission, let's say a mission is some sort of, let's say, spy of sorts, a very low-key type thing, and I'm supposed to be in a place where I'm not noticed and do all sorts of things and so on, and I successfully do it, I consider myself a success. I consider myself because I fulfilled my mission, and I've realized myself. Whereas if the person doesn't have that sense, then by what standard do I exist? What am I? Just another one, just another nameless dot plodding along. So it really does depend on having a Kadosh Baruch Hu in the picture, because that's the only way I can say if I realize myself, then I am. It's if the self is because a Kadosh Baruch Hu made such a self, and whatever he put into me internally to be realized is me, then I have a sense of self and realization. And this is a really, by the way, this is a key in the difference between a religious approach or a psychological approach allows. Psychology has to agree that with the patient that you want to be a somebody. And being a somebody is going to be measured with everything and everybody. Somewhere along the line, if I'm a very, very mediocre student, a mediocre this, mediocre that, mediocre other thing, then who am I? What am I? The praise and sort of the adoration is what marks me as existing. So the only thing a helpful psychologist can do is redirect and say, listen, you're going to be a lousy student. You'll never make it as a student. Don't try. You do well as doing music. So why don't you just focus on music stuff and so on. If you have a religious perspective, then at the end of the day, existence is lifnei Hashem. That's what existence is. I exist because HaKadosh Baruch Hu recognizes my existence in every sense of the word. And that gives me existence. And all that counts really is, where do I rate Klape HaKadosh Baruch Hu? What am I? Lifnei Hashem. So even if no one else acknowledges it, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave me potential to be realized, if it's realized, then that's that. It requires having a Kadosh Baruch Hu in the picture, or else there's no there's not going to be any hakara. There's not going to be an existence. I once heard from somebody, you know, sometimes you hear from somebody, I don't know, a complaint or a tale of woe, which really, it's hard sometimes to hear. There was a boy in yeshiva many years ago. He's from the area somewhere and he grew up here. And he was one of these boys that really stood out, no sense. Wasn't terribly social. Very, very, you know, kind of gray. Not a bad kid, did everything he was supposed to do, but nothing made him stand out in any sense. And that was him. He came to me once and he said something is troubling him terribly. He said year after year on Simchas Torah, he's the person that when the Gabbai announces at the end of all the Kriyas, is there anyone here who still hasn't gotten an Aliyah? I'm the one that has it. So I decided this past year that, you know what, I will stand next to the Gabbai so that he can't not notice me. He said, and guess what? My Aliyah was the Aliyah of, is there anyone here who still hasn't gotten an Aliyah? So why is it that I'm not noticed, even if when I'm standing, you know, when I'm standing next to the Gabbai? And that was, you know, it was something that hurt him terribly. It's almost he doesn't exist. So if you exist by dint of the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu acknowledges your existence, and you measure your existence lifnei Hashem. Okay, let's see the next piece. Uperek Yom HaKippurim, I think. Yeah, that's what we're holding? Yeah?
Yep.
Okay. Uperek Yom HaKippurim, Mayrechsiv mini raglich miyachev, ogroinich mitzoma. Mini atzich michet, kedesh lover aglaich de yichov. Don't do averis so that your foot doesn't go bare. Mini lashaynich midabed varm betalim. In other words, there's a description here of two different situations. Raglich miyachav, walking barefooted, is a description of being downtrodden. Slaves, they would march barefoot. Avelus is yachav. So mini atzim mechet. So the Gemara is inserting, it's mini, it's as if there'd be a comma there, desist from Averis, so that Raglech won't be Yachav. You know, do something so that, which means desist from Chet. So the Onesh for Chet, so to speak, is walking with Raglaim Yechefois, and the Onesh for Leshein of Davidor Metelim is the Tzimol. Upiriseh. So first thing he speaks about the union of Yachav Raglaim. Let's talk a little bit about this. Let's discuss it a drop. The foot is considered to be the lowest part of the body. The Akev is the lowest. There's a Pasuk Raglai Yodis Mofsa. First of all, the feet are the furthest away from the heart and the mind. It's the extremity, literally. And you know, the person who has trouble, the feet are always the ones that swell and so on, because it can't reach there. So the foot is furthest away from the person. It's also closest to the ground, so it's almost as if it is just about of the same nature as the ground. So on the one hand, you find that Chazal, how important it is to wear shoes. It says a person should sell everything he has to wear shoes. I guess that's where the shoresh for expensive shoes for women is, to be mekayim chazal. And the osili called tzarki is going on the shoes. On the other hand, in a makam kadosh, where it says Shal Nalechem Arglecha Kemachta of Kaddishu, is because you can't show that you are holding yourself above the place. If it's a Makom Kaddish, then putting a shoe as a barrier implies that there's something lowly or filthy or whatever it is and what you're standing on, and that's not good. Masha'ein kain in a place that's filthy, whatever, so forth, that's where the person wears his things. It's also, the Malbim explains that's the inyan of the chalitzas hanal. If a person doesn't want to marry his yavama, there are one of two reasons. Either he doesn't care enough about being mekim shem for his brother because he doesn't find her attractive enough. So that's something, there's something extremely noble about being mekim shem. And if he refrains because of some earthly consideration, or Abishol, who says that, that if a person's kavan is not sinish mayim, he should refrain from ibum. It's the same thing. So anytime the taking off the shoe by chlitza is a degrading of the person. I'm left a person's shul is standing with his feet connected to the ground, as if he's not at all elevated over the ground. He's not chashev in it. He doesn't stand above it. That type of thing. I want to add a point. That's very mekubal. That's where regal is and so on. What about a person's hands? Lechura, a person's hands also come in contact with the world. A person who works with his hands doing all sorts of dirty labor, schlepping stuff and pulling things, and people get their hands dirty. A farmer and so on, the hands also get pretty much. So yes, the feet are true, that the feet are further away from the heart. That's true, but because in terms of being connected to the world, we don't find gloves as being of halachic significance. If anything, it says that the there was a kohen gadol who wore gloves for the avoda. And as a punishment, he was killed by the king. That's how Kadosh Baruch Hu was misavavit. But he wore gloves because of disdain of the blood and the meat. And then because it was kaddish, it was bad. But still, in terms of a person's, we don't find anywhere in Chazal make any significance of that. And yet a person could be. It could be dirtying himself with it. So I think the following is the difference, and the big difference. The feet's connection to the ground is automatic and mindless. The hands are the hands connecting are a conscious act decided by me. In other words, let's take an example. Let's bring to focus a bit about a practice situation. Imagine there's a person who hangs out with Rav Chevra. That's his sort of his natural Chevra, and that's who he hangs out with. A second person works as a Makariv with Rav Chevra. There's a big difference in the two, because the one who, for whom this is his natural milieu, and he does it mindlessly, so he has become part of it. Masha'ein kein, when I make a conscious act of going in a certain into a certain place or person, whatever it is, so in within that framework, I am the one that is master over it. Something that's a default setting for me, that's automatic, that's natural, that masters me. That has mastery over myself, my habits, my defaults, etc. Those things that I do as a voluntary act or as a conscious act where I need to be proactive, I'm master over it. So the feet are automatically on the ground. and that means even the word hergel, the word habit, comes from the word regel. And when a person walks, there is never ever any conscious activity, unless God forbid, you know, people who have a you know, some sort of impairment, chas v'shalom, and they need to, you know, they walk, they need to think about the walking, which in which case it's a very difficult, lo aleinu. With your hands, so yeah, there are some activities that are automatic, but many times we need to focus it, we need to do something about it. So the even though the hands come into contact with the physical world, it's very, very different than the way the feet come into contact. And that's why the Pchisus is specifically focused on the regel and not on the Yadayim. The Chayn, Kash Odom Eina Choyte, Moinea, V'kach, Kash Odom Eina Choyte, Moinea Gufoy Min Lichul Chisachet. So if a person is Moinea himself from Chayt, he pulls back, he doesn't soil his raglayim. So the Navi is telling you that not living a ruchnistic life is not only it's not only lacking a mila, but it's tzimon, which means it's lacking something very, very life-giving. I want to add another point here. For that, it would be enough that a person would not learn Torah, but wouldn't be Isaac Nevar Batalim. It doesn't. In physical activities, you can say it's either or. You can say physical activities are either physical or they're ruchnius. But here we're talking about the need to be osik in divrei Torah. So he says that a person should be moneah from a person shouldn't speak varm betalim, should be osik divrei Torah. But that's kind of, you don't need to use the mashal of varm betalim. A person could not be speaking varm betalim, could be just sort of silent and not be speaking divrei Torah. Why is that the opposite of it? So I think what he means is, I would assume from it as following. It says that an Adam is a nefesh chaya. A person must express himself. Very few people can be silent in the sense where they're not at all express themselves. Some people express themselves through dibur, some through ksiva, some with everybody that comes around their way, some people only with chaverim, chavruses. But expressing yourself is a core human need, because that's what a person is. And therefore, the person needs to make a choice between the Dvarim Betalim or Torah. If a person will not have a way of expressing himself through Torah, he's not going to be able to express himself any other way. If he's not going to be osing Dvarim Betalim, he will have to express himself through Torah. In physical activities, it's not like that. A person can do averis, not averis. A person can do mitzvahs, not do mitzvahs. Not really. Yes, we don't like to sit around doing nothing, but there's no real drive that a person needs to be doing all the time. A person can be laying in bed, kind of. But in diburim, since dibur is a core human value, there's going to have to be diburim. You're going to have to speak to people about things. And if the things are not, like the Rambam says, divrei chachma or divrei Torah, they inevitably will be dvarim b'teilim. Okay, that's the end of this paragraph. Next, Perikamedik Subis. Tana Rabbanan, al yashmiya l'ozov dvarim b'teilim, b'tnei she nichvim t'chilo levarim. It says a person shouldn't hear dvarim b'teilim because the ears are the most sensitive. They most sensitive to temperature. They become quote unquote they singe before they burn. So Chazal here are specifically being osek in dvarim b'teilim. B'shvil sha'oizinu ascholas kilkul adam. I want to add a nekuda to this. I guess explain something here, and it really also is negiah to the piece before. He's talking over here about the Shmiz Ram Betalim, even though there's no Issaklal, Bishol Sha'oizan Scholz Kilkul Adam, and so on. the human, just like Tzimon, that he's mentioned before, is a basic instinct, maybe the most basic instinct we have, to want to quench our thirst, a person needs. A person needs to be osek in something. the impetus for doing and being osek in what's right comes from the fact that a person needs to be doing. That's a person's mitzias. If a person fills himself with dvarim b'teilim, then he replaces the chachma. So instead of there being chachma inside, it's shtusim, you know, whatever it is, ball game and this, that, and the other thing, and dvarim shomabekach. So, there are areas where, we'll give an example. There are certain foods that contain zero calories because they're not digestible. So imagine you keep feeding somebody food. So a person, when he's hungry, his stomach is empty and he has a need to eat and he has a drive that will keep him eating until his head is full and probably a lot more. But let's say a person stuffs himself with stuff that just fills him but has no nutritional value. So that person will starve to death. And it's not, what's guilty in it is whatever it is that he filled himself with. Because if a person is starving, the hunger pang will drive him to get food. But if a person thinks he's full, and you know, I won't go into physiology because our hunger sensation is driven by many things. It's driven by our physical sense of our stomachs being full or not, sugar level and so on. It's not relevant. What's more relevant is just mean the muscle of it. That when I replace the good with something that has nothing to offer, I'm in effect starving myself. And it's not, in a deeper sense, it's not what I didn't eat, that starvation, which is the core definition of starvation, it's what I ate and shut down my sense of drive to eat something. So when a person stuffs himself up with dvarim b'teilim, that is a kilkel for the person. But, so he says, since the reason is first, b'tzorech she'yishma dovesh ha'schol ha'shes kalkel, ki ach ha'schol dem shakol. And the reason why the ears are so important because Haskhala and everything follows, you know, Haskhala is very, very significant because everything follows from the Haskhala. Yes, when you jump in, the ear is the thing that sticks out the most, so it's going to be singed first. The ear is very sensitive and so on, so it burns, but everything gets burnt. So what I care the ear is first, but everything's affected by fire. And if there's something wrong in the nefesh, we're not going to say the nefesh has parts exactly, and we'll say A before B and B before C. It says over there that when you when you put a head of an animal into a fire, into barbecue, the air gets singed first. So he says the but that's not exactly the marshal. The Gemara, the ear gets roasted first. The ear gets done first, but it's the entire head that gets singed. How long it takes to get to be done? Yes, the ear is very soft and it's pretty rapid. But when you're talking about singeing, everything catches fire. The question is just how long does it take for the fire to be tofus in the whole thing. So he says like this. V'da, ki romza means that dovnif ma'yutzuras ha'adam. Ki ha'ozen shal ha'adam hu t'chilach ha'ivarim v'u nechshav pesach l'adam. V'dovza bi'ana v'kame koymois v'msechtes k'dushin etzel ritzia. V'chol dova shuhu pesach ha'schola kasha ha'schola mekul k'vosh oid kilkach ha'zeh. U'kumei sha'amru im sha'moya tishma. Tishma, Adam Shemeya Ma'at Mashmir Zaharbe, Shocheach Ma'at Mashkir Zaharbe. So Lemaisa, he brings a raya that a person is, he says, by Ritzia, you see that that's where you do Ritzia, and he explains over there, it's the Pesach, and that's where everything, if there's any problems there, everything else follows and so on. So let's talk a little bit about what it means, the Pesach and so on. The whenever a person sees something with his eyes, his tfisa on it is, this is what I am seeing and experiencing. It's my own viewing and it's my own experiencing of it. That's sort of re'iyah. Shmiyah means I am allowing something in from the outside. Rather, I'm allowing something in to join my das and chachma come from the outside. For instance, if I see somebody kill somebody, so in that case, I am. It's a metzias to me. And I'm not letting any information in. This is what I am experiencing. So it's really me. When I hear something from somebody else, I didn't know about it. I didn't experience it directly, but I'm willing to let in information from the outside. I'm willing to let ideas in. Somebody else's ideas, understanding, what have you not, are let in through the ear. It's the gateway to an entire person, and that's why it's such a sensitive area. And he says, And being that the ear is first, it also has the first problem. It's just like, imagine you have some sort of program that's there to catch viruses. That program in itself is in a vulnerable position because it's there to filter out the viruses and accept the good messages. If it itself goes, it goes. So even something as small as this, it's something where it will be easily affected by it. So any time you affect the gate in the entranceway, you affect the entire thing. It's very, very interesting. I mean, when I was growing up, for many decades until recently, the membrane of a cell was considered to be of little consequence. It was unimportant. I mean, it's a casing. It's as important as the casing for your iPhone. I mean, some people feel it's very important, but in terms of the significance, its biological significance was minimal. we've since then realized that the whether or not a cell will be affected by many outside agents, whether it's bacteria, whether it's cancer cells, whether it's chemicals of sorts, really depends on the membrane, because the membrane is the gatekeeper. It dictates what gets in and what doesn't get in, and what's allowed and what's not allowed in. That's a very, very significant, and the existence of the entire cell is really totally on the membrane and its ability to filter out what's desirable, what's not desirable. So if you affect something through the ozone, if you manage to get through the gateway of the ozone, and the ozone itself is kol netchet, then you have a real problem. Then you're going to have to you're leaving yourself in a position that everything become infiltrated, just like in a computer. There's the firewall, there's whatever it is, at every entrance to something you need to have that gateway. Bechol sharecha. Sorry, who asked?
I was just gonna. Is it accurate to say that the eyes are even more of a sensitive gate because it, so to speak, bypasses the very filter? It becomes part of the person immediately.
What's the very sensitive gate? What?
The eyes. Like the Rav was saying.
The way we understand the eye is on the one hand, I mean, we do know we're affected a lot more visually. But the things that I perceive visually, I don't. This is the metzias that I'm in. I don't perceive it as something coming in from the outside. Thoughts and ideas can never come in through the eyes. When you read and you read an idea, that's a b'china of shmiya. But ideas and thoughts come in only through the ears. Any perception about the world, any way of evaluating the world, describing the world, is coming through the ears. So the ears are the ones that, in this sense, are much deeper. And if I absorb somebody else's take on something, then I'm affected by it. L'toy v'lemuta. So he says, V'oid yesh lev azeh inye muflag mo'id. Ki ha'oizen shuk mepesach bayis hu nechshav tzuras ha'odam. V'lekach ha'cheresh שוחס השמיה אין הנחשב אדם פתקל המצווס. מזה, מפני כהוא נחשב כמו כלי שאין לו ביס קיבל, שנחשב כלי קל. ולכך האויזן אויסה אדם לגמרי. So he says something very, very fascinating. He says over here that the אויזן, which is like a pesel bias, is the etzem tzuras האדם. He wants to say that a cheresh, you know, who's ein shemayim medaber, is ein nechshav b'tchol mitzvos. Now, it's a little hard to understand that, because if he's just an ein shemaya, he is chayav mitzvos. So why is it ein shemayim ein medaber? According to what he's saying over here, it's all talking about the korach hashmiya. I guess unless you want to extend it somehow to the other things as well. And he says, yes.
Ein shemayim, ein medaber. It means nothing was ever nichnas into his ear, right?
Correct.
If he became deaf later on, so if something got in there, then it got closed up afterwards.
Correct. Good point. In other words, if the person is a medaber, he's shayach to the world of shmiya somehow, because there's no way you could make a sound without actually having heard, felt something like that. Okay. Good point. So he says the chesh shuchas shmi enechshav adam patur mitzvah zem neku nechshav kli shen beiskibul shen nechshav kli klal l'chein oizen oizes adam legamri. Now he's saying here something. I think he's saying something extremely significant about what tzuras adam is. Let's give a mashal. Imagine I tell you that I have a fantastic, I don't know, jigsaw, electric saw, that really cuts much, much deeper and quicker and cleaner than anything else you have. Say, wow, that's great. But the one thing is, the handle is broken off, so I can't hold it. Well, so we need to say the following. This is the best saw around. It cuts the furthest, the deepest, the cleanest, so on and so forth. It is useless as a tool. In other words, whenever we're dealing with tools, we're evaluating something on two levels. First of all, how good of a job does it do? And the second one is, how well is it a kli in my hands? If it's not a kli, if it's not listening to me, if I'm not able to have a handle on it, then it's useless as a kli. So it may be, we may call this saw a fantastic saw, but an absolutely useless saw. It doesn't belong in your toolkit. It belongs in a museum. It belongs in a race for saws, whatever it is. It does not belong in your toolkit because it's not a tool. Adam is a kli, meaning that a person is shayach to fulfilling something. For that, you need a base kibble. You need to be someone with this input. So if I am my own person, so that's so it's all really up to my brains and abilities and so on. But if the Tzuras HaAdam is a kli, and I'm missing something, then I'm missing something that goes to the heart of the very very kli shabai. And therefore, a person who is a cheresh is part of mitzvahs, because mitzvahs are dafke chal on the person who sees himself as a kli of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if the person himself doesn't see himself, then basically it's like having that kli without a handle. So it's no longer a kli. For persons to look at mitzvahs, if I do all the mitzvahs in the world, and I'm doing it because I think they're great, so I'm not a kli b'yad Hashem, I'm not carrying out something that Kodesh Baruch Hu's put on me. I'm carrying out something that I think is great. That's all. So then there's no way. That's not shayach to the world of mitzvahs. It's the word tzeves, mitzvahs, and the word tzeves means something that is mechubah to something. And if I'm oike the koyach oizen, then I don't have that anymore.
What do we mean mitzvahs? I'm doing something, but I don't necessarily know it's from. Is it the poshim shat there? I don't know. I'm doing something from Hashem. I'm doing a ma'aseh mitzvah, but I don't have to. Or that's just bedafke at the time. But in general, you do know.
Well, I think everyone recommends that mitzvahs have kavana, but mitzvah and sios kavanas would be that. The Torah is mitzave only on the act, because since kavana is always sort of dependent, and it's not something you can fix and say you have to have this amount of kavana. So it's just a question of, as long as I did the mitzvah, I fulfilled my obligation. But it's certainly not, it's without the content of the mitzvah. But the Torah, it wasn't mechayev, the Torah was mechayev, but the ikar fulfillment is through injecting some of my kavan in it. So he says,
Svedakya
Tzur. Yes.
Is there a tzad shava with a shota and a katan, the same concept, or is it something unique to cheresh?
You're asking if there's a tzad shava between cheresh and shaita and katan? Yes. It's the same. Let's explain what the tzad shav is. Someone who doesn't have das is not shayach to the world of tzivuyim. A person who's a bar das has a sense of obligation. So the concept of HaKadosh Baruch Hu being mitzavimi exists because tzivui in general exists. Masha'ein kein, when you're a shayta or katan, you can't be mitzaveh because the person doesn't have even mitzaveh's panemius. Let's go into a person's own panemius. In our own seichel and das, we have also a certain mitzvah. Part of our seichel can say, it would be, it's very nice to do X, Y, and Z. You'll really enjoy it and have a smashing time. Another part of our seichel, and this is the more ikker part of what seichel is there for, is you have to do this. You know this is right, and you must do it. Not as consequences, but just the sense of obligation, the sense of duty, responsibility, all those words are our pnimistic koach hatzivui. If I have a question, should I go visit Reuven or Shimon? And my decision-making process goes as follows. Reuven usually gives me cinnamon cake, and Shimon gives me chocolate cake, and I like cinnamon cake better, so I guess it'll be Reuven. That's not a decision process. That's a sort of a, it's just gauging which hanah is bigger. That's not a decision, the right word, in the full sense of it. That if I say to myself, you know, I like them both, or I like one more than the other, except that I feel obligated because this person is lonely, sad, or whatever it is, and my being there for him and helping him is good for him, then I'm obligating myself. The self of me would like to visit Reuven. The little man inside with the long white beard says, but you know that you ought to visit Shimon. So there's a type of kfir, pnimis. That's not shaykh. A shayta and a katan don't have that. They don't have a fully developed internal being who is kaif himself. And that's why, you know, that's why ketanim and adolescents have a problem. They you know, they don't, many times they make bad decisions for that reason. Okay, I think we'll hold it here.
Rabbi, does that mean that the Cherish, he can't hear the Tzibui of Hashem? He can't let that into him, so he's not shaykh to it?
One, that's true. And also, I can't yell at him. In other words, I cannot be mitzavah him. He may find out. But there's a direct connection when I tell you to do something. That connection is lacking by a Cherish. You know, it's different. So the Torah didn't feel they could expect it from him. Okay. Good Shabbos.
Thank you very much.
Take care. Bye.